Hey everyone, this is Stelly Efti.
And this is Heaton Shah.
And in today's episode of the Startup Chat, we're going to talk about how to build or design your board of directors.
I think we like talking about more than just sales and marketing.
We just want to bullshit and chat about business and life. And hopefully, while we're doing that, provide a lot of value to people.
The world's best business podcast.
Oh, shit. We got it.
For people trying to get shit done.
Yeah. We don't want to give you feedback that's bullshit.
Yeah, we want you to do your best.
That's right. So this is for startups. This is not just for startups that are raising money. I assume it's predominantly for these. This is maybe an interesting question. How many startups that are self-funded actually build a board of directors that go beyond their founders? And at what stage does that make sense? But if you have any kind of success or if you raise money as a startup, you're going to sooner or later going to be faced by the question of building out your board. And that's such a kind of foreign thing for most founders to do. Most founders that are going to put together their board of directors will do that for the very first time, and they're not going to be doing it with any high level of frequency. So I feel like there's a lot of mistakes that probably are being made there, and there's a lot of founders out there that are just curious about this topic.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it's like one of the most interesting topics that founders struggle with. I mean, you usually don't have to deal with it till you get to later stages. So that is something worth mentioning. And so one thing I'll start with is, like, ideally when you have a seed round or the earliest stages, you actually don't want to consider having a board. And sometimes it's actually a red flag if you raise like $500,000 or something and someone wants to get on the board. So I'd love to discuss that for starters, Stelly, of like, when should you get a board?
I love it. Timing, right? When is the right time to get a board? Okay. So, I mean, you hinted at it already to some degree where it's not the right time when it's super early or when you are just raising a seed round and some of these investors or maybe even angel investors want to join your board. That should be a red flag. The obvious question here is why? Why wouldn't you want a board of directors as soon as possible? Aren't they helping you? Aren't they going to be part of the team and helping you with management and with decision making? And like, why would you want to delay that to a later stage? What's the core reason for that?
Yeah, in the beginning, you have to just be so inwardly focused in your business that a lot of outside input from people who aren't your customers or, you know, your team ends up being a distraction, to be really, really honest about it. At the same time, if an investor thinks they can really help you and they want to be on the board and they want to make you have board meetings and all that, and you've raised like $500,000, you've probably got an investor that's just so, and I know we've talked about this before, but so deep into your business that like it might be detrimental, because at that stage, everything can change overnight. Like literally your whole business needs to pivot and things like that. And then the investors bought into a model, they're on the board and they're going to try to push you right in directions that might not make any sense for your business. So who knows best at that point? Your investor that's on the board just because you raised $500,000 and they put in 100 or 200 of it, or you and your team and your customers. And that's where that distraction is not really worth it. So I would say that if you get a board of directors super early, it's usually a distraction. And I'm going to call out a firm who I know really well, just to mention a name, but like True Ventures tends to actually not get on the board in the earliest stages of your business. And they do early stage rounds. That's their whole model. And the reason is they might have a board observer if you want, or they might just let the founders have it. Most of the time, they just have the founders be on the board and they basically get the F out of your way. And that is like, I have a ton of respect for that, because they realize the earliest stages, things change, and having board meetings and all that could be a big distraction. And that doesn't mean to say that, you know, they don't get involved or don't want to help you, but it's just like they want to give you the room to explore and find that product market fit.
I love that. And I think that, you know, there's a difference, you know, just because somebody doesn't sit on your board of directors doesn't mean they can't be incredibly helpful. It doesn't stop people from giving you advice when you ask them. It doesn't stop them from jumping on a phone call when you need them. It doesn't stop them from, you know, showing up at your office and brainstorming with you. It doesn't stop them from making introductions. It doesn't stop them from being an advocate for your product. If I've invested in your company, nothing stops me from being as useful and as valuable to you as you need me to be, without having the formality of a board seat. I think putting together a board just makes things very formal, right? You have to have a certain kind of way to go about it. It needs to be documented a certain way. You give these people power, you know, real like voting power. And all of a sudden, I think that formality in the early days is just more slowing things down and more harmful than it's useful. but I don't think you're losing anything. Like, if you have investors that want to be involved and you think they can really add a ton of value, they don't. The seat on the board is not what gives them the ability to help you. They've invested in your company. They have a vested interest in its success. And if they want to be a champion and help, they can. They don't. You don't need to have a formal board to do that and accomplish that goal, right?
Not at all. Not at all.
So, okay. So we know super early, you should be either inwardly focused on the team and the things that you guys want to do, or the people that you want to be closest with are your customers, right? Are your users. And then everybody externally, you know, you can tap into when you need them, but a board is probably not the right structure in the super early days. So then when is the right time? When is the right time? I mean, obviously, once you get to the Series A, I don't know if it's the right time or not, but it's the agreed upon time. It's kind of a given that if at least a venture fund puts in money in your company in a Series A structured financing, they will want to have a board seat. But I'm wondering, just because I raised that question earlier and we didn't talk about that at all, if you look at self-funded companies as kind of a separate grouping, is there a right timing for them as well? And let's compare the two, right? With venture-funded companies, we know that the Series A is the timing that you're probably going to need to put a board together. What is the right time for a self-funded company? Or maybe there is never a right time. What's your thinking there? What have you seen work well or hasn't worked well?
Yeah, I mean, usually when you have a lead investor, let's say like a Series A round, and you're raising like millions of dollars, so $2, $3, $4 million, and someone's putting in like a firm is putting in 50 to 80% of that round, that's when you usually get a board. These days, sometimes you don't even get a board at that stage, but most of the time you get a board of directors and you have to set it up. And the idea there is like an investor is highly invested and they put in a bunch of money and the board sort of system gets put into place at that point. And the general thought process there is, and on what people say as a general rule, is ideally you want like an odd number of people on the board. And the reason is there's an even number of people. Two people can, and boards have a lot to do with voting on things. It could be voting on firing somebody, as extreme as that, or voting on taking venture debt. And there's all these other things that people can vote on. We don't need to get into that here, but there's a lot of like fiduciary responsibility that gets added the second you have a board and investors on it and all that. And, you know, usually you'll have a lawyer that comes to your board meetings just to take the notes, or someone else can take the notes, but there's a process, right? And it's very structured. There's like books on this, but at the end of the day, like the tips that I don't hear are like more about board management. So I would love to get into that at some point. Maybe it's another episode, but like in terms of like when to get a board and what to do, odd numbers are important because then, so, you know, if votes happen, then if it's like five people on a board, it's like two votes versus three votes. Or if it's three people on a board, it's two votes versus one vote. And it's hard to have like a standoff, right, where it's two and two if there's only four people. So usually what I've seen typically in the first round where you start getting a board, usually a Series A, is there's three people on the board, two founders and the lead investor. I've also seen it where it's a lead investor, maybe an independent director, and then one founder, depending on kind of the situation. But that's the most common thing I've seen.
Yeah. So that structure is really important. And I think that a lot of founders just, what they realize once they go through the process of, you know, typically at the beginning, the founders are kind of the board members, the board directors, right? It doesn't matter if it's two co-founders or three. And then once you add external people that were not there as co-founders of the company, it really shifts the dynamic in the company from, you know, you as founders were kind of a team and had a lot of decision-making power to now, I don't want to say you have bosses, but now things have changed and it's much more the board that can decide over if you're doing a good job or not, if you're going to keep your job or not, independently from what your equity situation is, than it was before. So it's kind of a big shift in the power dynamic of the company. So hence why it's so important to be selective. I think that most founders strive to find a balance between bringing directors that will not just be yes men, but add real or yes women and add value to it and maybe even challenge things at times, but not to the degree where they will, you know, kind of take over the company or undermine the core values or the core vision or the even the founders, right? To a big degree, as a founder, you have self-interest. You don't want to add people to the board that will work against you and at some point push you out of situations. So you mentioned a little bit about like board management. Maybe just on a very high level, you know, obviously it all starts and ends, or a big part of board management is board selection, I would say. It's just picking the right people. How do you think about that? I mean, I assume that it's to a large degree the same way that you would think about picking your co-founders or picking any kind of really important relationship, where you want to make sure that you really truly understand them, their motivation, you really make sure that there's alignment there. A little bit maybe about kind of your experience on how to pick the right directors to join versus the wrong ways of picking people. And then we might want to share a few tips, a few thoughts on like, how do you then on an ongoing fashion manage the dynamics within the board?
Yeah, the word that comes to mind for me is more expectations. So expectations are really important in any relationship. I think they're more important in an investor-founder or set of founders relationship than anything else. And that has to do with your lead investor and the one that's on the board more than any other investor typically. So I'm not saying every investor, you should understand their expectations. There are generic ones like, hey, we're giving you money so you can make us money. And you make us money if you go public or if you sell the company or something like that. Those are the basic two options, honestly. And so you have to know what you're getting into. And then it's just a conversation of expectations. It's like, what do you expect of me? Are there, you know, things I would ask these investors is like, once you've like signed the term sheet and all that before your first board meeting is like, how do you like the board? Do you have an example deck that you can send me or walk me through? Are there best practices you have? Is there things that you don't like and things you like? The reason I say that is there is very specific advice I'd give about boards. Like, for example, don't change every slide every time. Build on your slides. Like create slides and then literally repeat them. For example, at Kissmetrics, we had major infrastructure challenges for probably 18 months, to be honest. And it wasn't like customers could see them, but we had lots of issues in the back end that were preventing us iterating the product. So we created one diagram that had red, yellow, green, and all of our infrastructure. It's not like any of the investors understood the infrastructure itself. Maybe a couple of them did, but not really, or any of the board members did. But we were able to show yellow, red, green. Everything started red and yellow. And eventually, by the end of the 18 months and the last board meeting where we really solved it, everything was green. And then we stopped using the slide. That slide showed up in about 7 or 8 board meetings in those 18 months. And it was awesome because it helped them understand where we were at, what we were doing, and how things were going, and whether we were making progress towards that goal. So that's a very specific example. But think about your financials. Think about the cap table. Think about all those things you need to share. I see too many founders try to get fancy with every board deck when all you really need to do is focus on the sections that are important that are repetitive and make them repetitive and make them build on themselves of what happened since last time. But don't forget to show the historicals in the past. And it's just funny. I don't see them do that. But outside of that, like it really just boils down to who is an investor and what do they expect in that board deck? And there are some generic rules again, but some investors have hot buttons like, hey, I always want to know what's going on in the product, right? And that's a generic thing, but some investors have that, but not everyone does. So if your investors and your board members don't care about your product as much or don't care about the details of it, but they want to know the high level metrics and stuff, focus on that. But if they do care about you sharing that, focus on that. One other thing that I'll share, just a big tip, maybe it's my last tip on the board stuff, because I'm sure this episode can go much longer, Sally. But it's basically this. One of the best practices, which not everyone follows, is that you want to talk about in the board deck, you want to send it beforehand 24 to 48 hours before. And then you also want to make the bulk of the conversation not repetitive about what's in the deck, but more so a very important key discussion you want to have with your board. Because then you can make it really fruitful. They feel like they're adding value. And then if the onus is on you to have a great discussion about the biggest challenge you're having that you're honestly some of the most invested people in the room, in your company, are there all at once. So you want to make good use of their time, and usually having that one topic that's most important and it's really challenging for you is what you should spend the bulk of your time on. Very few founders do this, but it's when you really turn board meetings into being really productive.
I love that. And in the prior episode on how to raise a Series A, we talked about this kind of super successful founder that's a friend of yours that figured out that actually putting together a really strategic deck and doing it the right way was not just kind of just to appease to investors, but was also incredibly valuable as an internal tool to understand their own business better and where they should go next. And I feel like if you manage your board correctly and if you do these board meetings correctly, that deck is something that you could internally use. That's something that allows you to check in with like how things are going on a larger level. And to your later point, you know, if you do the proper work to make sure that people are informed, the board, the directors are informed when they come to the table, then you can focus on having real discussions versus having everybody come to the table to go through a deck together and basically waste time repeating something that people could have read on their own and then not have as much time to actually get, you know, real discussions or real decisions out of the situation. Now, let me, there's one thing I want to add, then I want to touch on this episode before we're going to wrap it up, which is this idea that things might change and kind of get out of your control. I know that, you know, in some cases, when a VC firm invests, they might, you know, that lead investor that you work with might get on the board. And then, you know, sometimes VCs change firms. So that VC now changes its firm, but the lead investor in that round is still the old VC firm. So they might replace the board seat with somebody else that works at that firm and somebody else that you didn't build the relationship with. He or she wasn't the person that was initially the person championing the deal and all that. So all of a sudden now, this incredibly important seat on your board was replaced by a new person, and you may have control over that, but maybe not. And I want to, and this is such a, this is not that rare, but it's something that most people are not aware of at all. They think that they never even imagined that that could happen. I want to just maybe a few words on this kind of a scenario. What happens when something drastic changes in your board that was outside your control and there's now a person that you don't know? How do you deal with that? What do you do? How to think about that?
I mean, it's tricky, right? And I think a lot of those things are very contextual to the specific situation that somebody's dealing with. And again, I don't want to get into a long thing about it, but I found that to be very, very, very specific to the situations that someone's dealing with. I don't know what you've seen, though.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen the good and bad. I've seen the situation happen where, you know, nothing bad happened and kind of it was a new investor that was on the board, but ultimately it kind of worked out and the person was, you know, very thoughtful and still somebody that added a lot of value, not really disruptive. And I've heard of the situation where a board seat was replaced by somebody new and that kind of created all kinds of issues and that person was very disruptive.
It is really difficult to get rid of a board member. Let's just put it out there, because I think people don't realize that. That's why, and I don't mean like an investor board member. I don't mean an independent board member. I don't even mean a founder board member. I mean all of them, right? Because it takes votes and stuff. So if you're not taking this stuff seriously as to who's on the board and why, you might be in for a lot of pain. I've dealt with this personally. I've never shared anything about it, but like it sucks. Because like there's a lot of emotion and stuff associated with them. People feel proud to be on your board, right? And there's a responsibility there, not just a fiduciary one, but there's demands, right? Like you make people show up for like a 2 or 3 hour session every like month, every quarter, every 2 months, whatever your cadence is, and they have to like show up. I mean, you know, there's even been times when like you get to the point where you're like, as a founder, you're like, crap, my investors are on the phone the whole time they're in the board meeting or on their laptops. I don't know what they're doing. So then you want to institute things like get rid of your phone. You can't have your phone when I'm talking here. Right? And like those things are hard to do too. So that's why this whole thing about expectations and being super careful about who's on the board is super important. Right? And that's without me getting into like the context and the specifics of how fucking bad it can go. It isn't about how great it is, because the majority of boards are so dysfunctional. It's actually one of the biggest problems in business today. And this extends all the way to public boards too. So that's my sort of mini rant for you on this one.
That's a very powerful way to end. I'm like, whoa. But I'm happy about it because I do think that, you know, getting founders a little shook on this topic is not the worst idea in the world. Just to make sure that you realize how severe and how important and how crucial these things are. So you can't just rush these things. You can't be laissez-faire and be like, yeah, I don't know if he or she is the right person for the board, but whatever, I don't want to deal with this anymore. Let's just wrap things up. Like, these are really important relationships. Once people sit on your board, they have real power, and it's very difficult for you to move things around or change that decision down the line. So you can't just think about this as an MVP. You know, you can't just think about this as something that, well, if it doesn't work, we'll pivot and we'll change things.
Oh, no way.
Take it very, very seriously and take the appropriate amount of time and care and thoughtfulness to make the right decisions. So I love that, Ren, and I think it's super important founders need to hear that. So I appreciate you sharing that. Now it's kind of hard for me to wrap this up with this, but I do think that we should, you know, there is a tool out there that recently launched that allows founders to actually work on their, it's mostly done for pitch deck and for raising money, for which is for people that are interested in board seats and board directors is going to be probably relevant. But I'm assuming your guys' tool for like collaborating on pitch decks or collaborating on decks in general could be used also for board decks, right?
I'm glad you mentioned that. Yeah, it is definitely a use case we're seeing already, and one we didn't like fully grasp or think of, but we knew if we put it out there, people would start using it for things like that too. So yeah, it's called getdugo.com. It's a new product I'm building with a partner of mine, and it's totally free to use. And the idea is that it helps you get feedback from people you care about on your pitch deck or even a board deck, and then you can even share it and understand who's looking at it and all that kind of stuff.
Sweet. Well, definitely go and check it out. And this is it from us for this episode.
Cheers.